I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today, it's gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so we've got this weird weather pattern going.
Yes, we do, and it looks like it's finally changing. I'm just so thrilled. Apparently, there was something called a negative North Atlantic oscillation.
Oh.
I'm a weather nerd. going on that kept us in this sort of damp, cool, gloomy weather pattern, but now it's changing and I'm just thrilled.
Yeah. And so this kind of having a bit of a wet spring, what are our consequences of that? I mean, it's good. We haven't had to water.
The drought is broken.
Yeah.
I think that's fabulous. One thing that I've seen is the plants that are in bloom are just, the bloom is prolonged this year. So things that normally in a more warm, dry spring would go by very quickly have stayed looking lovely. And as I've said to several people, I back to work part-time at a local garden center, and people come in complaining about the weather. And I said, you know, we've been spoiled the past several years in that this is the typical Cape Cod spring.
Mm-hmm.
I moved up here in 1980, and it was always wet and chilly in May, you know. But the past several years, we've had the drought, and we've had warm weather in spring. And while I love that, it's not actually our typical weather. And this is,
yeah. And one of the things we mentioned, the drought, we've got some dieback on some of the rhododendrons things that have had a rough couple of years.
Oh, yes.
And as we're cutting that those dead branches off and the dead leaves, will that fill in again, or is it forever?
You know, that's, I finally did find some time to get out. I have these two large, lovely Yakutia monum rhododendrons. Very, very pretty. A beautiful screen for what I call my quote-unquote utility area, which is just the real junky area where everything gets stored. And I noticed last fall that they had many dead branches throughout them. So I finally got out there and did some pruning. By the time I finished the first one, there were three wimpy branches left with foliage. And it just, frankly, was not attractive. So I cut the whole thing down. Will it come back? I don't know.
Oh, we'll see.
I don't know. It's about an 8-inch stub, and we'll see. I know they did it at Heritage Plantation several years ago on all the roadies as you came in the main entrance on the right-hand side, and they all did come back.
And they cut them back that much?
So I'm hoping. The other one, I was fortunate in that it didn't have as much dead stuff in it, but it is thinned out. So I'm going to fertilize in my spare time and hope that I get a lot of new growth, so it will fill in.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our number if you have gardening questions for Roberta this morning. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Now, I know we always ask this in May, where the frost date is. Are we good now? We're past the frost date?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, we can never give a hard and fast. We've passed the frost, full moon in May and all that happy stuff. I've seen frost in early June, so you can never be sure. If people are interested in getting their tender stuff out, I'm going to plant tomatoes this weekend.
Oh.
I'm going to cover them with floating row cover just in case.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's the 20th, where we are past the full moon. The long-range forecast shows nighttime temperatures, and that's what you want to pay attention to. Nighttime temperatures above 50.
That's
pretty much every night.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take that chance.
Yeah, I think I might take the chance as well. You know, I have a collection of dahlias, and I did not get to dig them up this last fall, which is very unlike me. But then I'm wondering, I was digging in the garden and I dug one up just to see, and some of it was all mush, but there were actually some bulbs still that looked like they might be okay. So what do you think? You think they might, maybe?
I have a friend who planted dahlias, and they were next to her foundation, which, of course, is a little more protected. And they came back reliably for a number of years
really?
In a row. Yeah. She doesn't have them this year. I don't know whether it was they just got old and pooped out or what. But I left some in the ground just because I have so many of this one variety that I grow. It was like, I can't bring any more in. They were mostly mush.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I didn't dig the rest. I just dug the one up, and I thought, well, I'm just going to wait and see what happens.
You'll see what happens.
I did buy some new ones, though, so I will have
mine. So did I.
All right. So this is a big question a lot of people are wondering about is managing the winter and gypsy moths. The winter moths are out now, right? But they don't seem to be in the numbers that they usually are.
They're both out.
Both out. Okay.
Both out. Both have hatched. Winter moth hatched a little bit later than usual for some odd reason this year. I mean, it has been cool, and insect development is governed by temperature. They are out. I am not finding them in, at least in my yard, which is my measuring stick. I'm not finding them in as great numbers as I have in previous years. I have a 3-in-1 Asian pear, and I call that my indicator plant because I haven't had a pear on it in years. I am going to have some pears this year. I do find them on my roses. I've seen them on maples, but not in overwhelming numbers. I have, however, seen a lot of little baby gypsy moths, which I normally don't have. Hmm. So I'm hoping that this damp spring, we might have a beneficial effect that it activates the entomophaga fungus that's found in the environment. That's what usually crashes the gypsy moth population.
Why do you think we have fewer numbers of the winter moths?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know if it's related to 2 years of drought. Mm-hmm. They pupate in the soil, and we had such a severe drought, I mean extreme drought, mm-hmm. last year. It's possible that impacted survival in the pupal stage, so there were fewer that were available to come out as moths. I did notice last November when the adult moths were out, fewer moths on the side of my house than normal. So I thought perhaps this spring I might see fewer, and I am. Yeah. So,
As mentioned before we went on the air, my cherry tree and my apple tree usually get completely decimated by the winter moths. And they both, well, the cherry tree's past its bloom now, but the apple tree is blooming. I'm thinking, hey,
nice.
I might get apples again this year. It's
you
been
might.
A few years since I've had any apples on the apple tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a call when we were talking with Mark Faraday in Bird News about a woman who was concerned about spraying her tree. She was going to spray her tree. She had gypsy moths, I believe. And they was worried about spinosad or any of those that seem like they're not as harmful as other
right.
things. But she was worried about it might kill bees or other pollinators or impact the birds. And
right.
so we said we would ask you about that when you got here.
Well, I'm glad people are concerned about pollinators because we need to protect our not only honeybees, but our wild bumblebees mm-hmm. and things like that. Spinosad only affects insects, so birds are totally safe. It will affect bees, but if bees are foraging on flowers and the spinosad is just sprayed or you're spraying something in bloom, so the bees are impacted by the wet spray. Once the spinosad dries, bees are not impacted. So I'm confident that it's not that much of a problem, particularly when you're spraying an oak or a maple. These are not bee-pollinated mm-hmm. plants, so the possibility of having lots of honeybees on it or bumblebees on it is slim. Mm-hmm. If, however, you are spraying, I have a beautiful encheanthus, red-veined encheanthus, that fortunately, they don't eat, but let's say the caterpillars did attack that, and I sprayed that when in bloom. That's like a magnet for mm-hmm. bees. So,
right.
yes, that would be a problem.
So you would want to spray your fruit trees before the blooms.
You want to spray your fruit trees before the blooms or after the bloom, mm-hmm. you know, although you might lose your crop by then. Or spray very early in the morning before the honeybee, or late in the day before the honeybees are foraging. So that way, you know, by choosing a good material, you're not impacting the rest of the environment, and by using it wisely, you're not going to be impacting the pollinators either.
Okay. And of course, if you're hiring the professionals, they know the rules. And
correct.
So if you're going to do it yourself, you want to really follow the directions.
That's correct. Yeah. Always, always, always read labels and follow the directions.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. My crepe myrtle, I walked by it this morning and I looked, and I know it usually comes late.
It's early.
But I saw one little teeny tiny branch with some leaves on it, and I thought, uh-oh. But
It's early. I was walking in my front garden where I planted a really nice purple-leafed crepe myrtle and was having a senior moment looking at this plant going, what is that? and, you know, I was snapping some twigs going, well, maybe this is not alive. And then I just did a little fingernail test down towards the base of the plant. And sure enough, it's perfectly green under the bark. So that will be coming back. Last year, after we had that horrible winter, I had a much larger crepe myrtle that had been in the ground for years and years and years. It died to the ground. So I basically cut it down, and it all came back. It was 15 feet tall. It all came back and was about 5 feet tall and bloomed beautifully. Mm. So sometimes we may lose the top growth, but the roots will regenerate. So they're wonderful plants.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
You have to make sure you're buying one of the quote-unquote hardy varieties.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And I have three hydrangeas that are planted right next to each other. Two of them are fine, and one of them, again, this year, died back to, you know, to the bottom.
I'm looking at my hydrangeas, and some look great, others not so much. They also were impacted by the drought last mm-hmm. year. Even though I watered, my water bill attested to the fact that I definitely watered last year. Irrigation, when you're using a sprinkler system, it doesn't substitute for good soaking rainfall. So I have some hydrangea that look good. I have other hydrangea that not so much. And so I'm rethinking how many more hydrangeas, the blue mop heads mm-hmm. that I want to plant. The paniculatas mm-hmm. are fine.
Yep.
They are just fine. They're rock solid.
Yeah, and you can cut those back.
You can cut those back anyway. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Tony in Hatchville writes, I have several Leyland cypress trees that are not dark green in color, but rather yellowish green in color. What could I add to the soil to green them up?
My question would be, have you fertilized since you planted them? It sounds like it's perhaps low nitrogen. Mm-hmm. You might send a soil test off to the UMass Soils Lab just to get a complete analysis, or you could fertilize them with a standard balanced fertilizer this spring that to try and green them back up.
All right. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more gardening after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with a horticulturist and entomologist, Roberta Clark. Our toll-free number is 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So with this rainy sort of spring we've had, we might see some disease problems because of that?
We've been really lucky in the past several years with our dry springs. We haven't seen a lot of dogwood anthracnose. We haven't seen a lot of peony blight. We haven't seen black spot a rose to any great extent, or apple scab on crab apples. I think, we're going to see all of those this year. Many disease organisms need a certain length of time of leaf wetness. The spores are always present in the environment. And when we have continually wet foliage, mm. as we have had over this critical period since the beginning of May, it's great for infection.
Mm. So what do we do about that? Is there anything we can
do? I always tell people, look for disease-resistant plants, mm-hmm. Number one, to avoid the problem. But if you are planting or you have flowering dogwood, Cornus florida, the native plant, you might want to consider a foliar spray. It's almost getting to the point where it's too late because they're leafing out. I would check it with, you could try Serenade or some of the other non-quote-unquote chemical fungicides and give them an application about 10 days apart mm-hmm. to protect the emerging foliage. Otherwise, I think we're going to see a lot of leaf spots. Mm. If your peonies are coming out of the ground and they're starting to look a little spotted on the foliage, same thing. You need to get some sort of fungicide on them to protect them.
Does it impact the flowers?
On the dogwood anthracnose, yes. Mm-hmm. Both it infects both foliage and flowers, and it also causes cankers on the twigs. Mm-hmm. So you get some lower branch dieback. Okay. In fact, that was the original name of the disease before they discovered the fungus that caused it, mm-hmm. called it lower branch dieback.
Huh. All right, Tamar's giving us a call from Vineyard Haven. Good morning.
Good morning. I had, last year, all my hydrangeas died, and I had to cut them back. They grew back, but there were no flowers.
Yep.
This year, three of them suddenly had leaves coming out. They were in sheltered areas with a lot of sun, and I freaked out, and I wrapped them up, and I stuffed them full of leaves, and they were fine. They lacked sun. They were warmer, and they were just fine. One of them was planted next to the dryer vent, and I was a little late on that one, and it didn't do so well. So I'm going to have to cut all the branches back on that beauty. But the others are good.
Mm, that sounds great.
Question, why doesn't my crepe myrtle ever flower, ever?
Ever.
Well, you know, they are late bloomers to begin with. Mine usually begins blooming sometime in late August. Yours might be an even later bloomer than normal, and we just get past the point where they can successfully bloom. Is it in a nice sunny location?
Pretty sunny, and it has never bloomed. And yes, it's the last thing to get leaves on it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. How often do you water it?
Oh, we're on the vineyard. It's so dry.
We have
to water a lot, and maybe it didn't get enough, but it's been, five years or more.
5 years, and it's never bloomed. Hmm. Yeah, it should
never be
blooming by now. I mean, some plants, you put them in, and they take quite a while. Rhododendrons are notorious for you plant them and they're in full bloom when you buy them from the nursery, and then they don't bloom for another 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're reliable. Oh. Same with dogwoods. I would probably just make sure you're keeping it well watered, maybe give it a little fertilizer, and keep your fingers crossed.
I thought perhaps it was a male. It didn't ever have flowers.
No, they have, I don't think they're male and female crepe myrtle. They have both sexes on the same plant, so they're in the same flower even. So they're capable of blooming all on their own.
Thanks for the call,
Tamar. Well, I think I'm going to dig it up.
Yeah, get something else in there. That
well, you know, C. Alfinari has been saying, you know, if you grow a plant and it's just not doing what you want it to do, don't give it the space.
Yeah.
You know, get rid of it and plant something else.
Right.
Thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Right, we have another listener ask, I have a climbing hydrangea, 3 years old, and is not bloomed yet. Is it okay to move it to a sunnier spot this spring? And when do you prune it? And what's the best feed for hydrangeas?
Okay, a climbing hydrangea will bloom beautifully with a half-day sun. I had mine on the east side of my house, which, speaking from experience, don't plant it on your house. Don't plant it on your chimney. Plant it on a trellis. I no longer have it because it was doing some damage. So it had gotten to the top of the chimney and was growing over the roof. And while it was lovely, it was a classic example of planting something in the wrong location. So learn from my mistake. However, they are notorious for taking about 4 to 5 years before they start blooming reliably. They also don't grow a lot. You know, they sort of sit there for a couple of years, and then they'll take off. So if you plant it with half day of sun, it's fine. If it's planted in deep shade, maybe not so much. Dappled light, I've seen them at the former Haskell Nursery in New Bedford. Alan had planted one at the base of a very, very large tree, mm-hmm. so it was pretty shaded. But it grew up into the tree and out along the branches, and when it was in bloom, it was spectacular. I've planted a new one to replace the one on my chimney because it was, frankly, way too big to transplant. And I have it out sort of in a wooded area, dappled light, and I'm growing it up a tree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recommend pruning them at all. And any standard fertilizer is fine for them.
Yeah, I have two. Both I planted on trees. One I planted, and it's sort of in a little shaded corner, and it's growing beautifully. Mm-hmm. Has not bloomed yet. Mm-hmm. And then the second one I planted a year or two after, and it's again growing up in a sunnier spot. So,
right.
But what is it they say? First year asleep. Second year it creeps, third year it leaps.
Exactly. They actually prefer a partially shaded location. I've seen them in full sun, and they're sort of yellowish in mm-hmm. their foliage, and they don't grow as vigorously. So a half a day of sun or dappled light, and they should be fine. But they're slow. Mm-hmm. Once they start taking off, they take off, but they're slow to begin.
Yeah, but once they do, boy, are
they're fabulous.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah, I think I saw it in one of the years ago. You had the tour of the Master Gardener's gardens.
Yes,
and somebody had them going up their tree, and I was like, I have got to
do
that. It
yes.
was so beautiful. Obviously, it'd been there for quite a while.
Yes, mine's been in the ground for 3 years now, and it's just starting to put out some nice growth. So I envision, I'm an optimist, you know, I plant small, and hope that I'll be around to see things come to fruition.
Yeah, yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. Evidently, our email is not working today, so you have to give us a call. 866-999-4626. The emails I have are from before the show. And Mindy in Hatchville writes, I have an heirloom rhododendron that is really struggling. It gets brown spots on the leaves, winter kill, and is just not thriving. Can you please ask us for some rhodies secrets?
Rhodies like dappled light. So it's an email, so I can't ask questions about what situation it's planted in. If it's planted in a full sun situation, it's probably not terribly happy. They can take full sun, morning sun. They would prefer no, you know, hot, dry afternoon sun. So dappled light, if you go to Heritage Plantation, you'll see they have them under trees that have been limbed up. So they get bright light, dappled light, some direct light, but not hot burning afternoon light. The second thing is rhododendrons have a shallow root system, and they like a soil that's high in organic material and that stays relatively moist. We've had 2-3 years of severe drought now. As I said, my two beautiful Yakushimanums, which I frankly confess are in an area that didn't get reached by the irrigation as well as it should have, greatly suffered. Mm. So good, steady moisture, a good soaking once a week is very important for rhododendrons, preferably with a soaker hose. You want the foliage, as if possible, not this year because it's raining, but you want the foliage to stay dry. Make sure the plant isn't planted too deeply or buried by mulch. Mm-hmm. I've seen rhododendrons with they get mulched every year, and then it's just too deep. And I fertilize with Hollytone for my rhododendrons, and they really seem to respond well to that.
Mm. And then Pat in Virginia writes, I have several. Is it clematis? Clematis? How do you say that?
Tomato, tomato.
All right. Well, she has several of them. I have read varying information regarding planting and how deep they should be planted, but some are doing better than others. Other than having their feet in the shade, how can I improve the vigor of the vine at the bottom? Does hilling help set it off more lower branches if the clematis has been planted, established, and is still not branching at the bottom, but is only sending up one or two stems? What else can I do?
My experience with clematis is that they don't branch at the bottom. That's not really how they grow. When you get them from the nursery, they're branched at the bottom. But once they're in the ground for several years, they vine up and they branch out above the, you know, further up the ground. The best way to grow them is with something in front of them that sort of hides that not terribly attractive viney growth at the bottom. I don't hill them up. That would essentially be putting the root system too deep. They should be planted at the same depth they were growing in the nursery when you got them. And again, just a general purpose food in spring. Plantone works very well. They do like their root system to stay cool. So she's correct. Roots in shade, top in sun. Mm-hmm. They'll be fine.
866-999-4626 for your gardening questions for Roberta this morning. 866-999-4626. I guess our email is working. thepoint@capevandhighlands.org. We've talked about this in the past, but it's worth mentioning now. We've had an issue with impatience.
Yes.
And let's tell us what that is.
There is a fungus called downy mildew of impatiens. It's specific to the garden variety impatiens that everyone loved to grow. Fabulous plant for the shade just by the, you know, mid to late summer. Beautiful mounds of color in dark shaded areas. It came in a number of years ago on nursery grown, you know, greenhouse grown plants. And unfortunately, once it's become established in a certain geographic area, the spores are present in the soil. And if you plant regular geraniums and it's a damp summer, or you're irrigating them with some regularity, which they need, they get infected. So, and you have large patches of them just dying out. Folks were even finding that, you know, those planted in window boxes would become infected. So I basically stopped, and many garden centers stopped recommending just the regular impatiens for your shaded areas. And there are other shade plants, wax begonias, for example, that will also, doesn't give you quite the same effect, but still is very pretty, both foliage-wise and flowers. And that if you really want impatiens, that you look for the New Guinea hybrids, which are resistant. They need a little bit more sun than the old-fashioned impatiens, so they really don't do quite as well when they're planted in that deep, dark shade. But if you go with regular impatiens, you know, it's a toss of the coin. Yeah. Are they going to get infected and die out or not? So I don't risk that.
Right. Ellie in Woods Hole writes, we have two wisteria plants in front of our house. One blooms gangbusters and the other not at all. Do you want me to beat them with a broom or what?
You know, I have seen wisteria that never, ever, ever blooms.
I can tell you how to try to dig it up.
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah,
then it'll go crazy.
Yes. Wisteria is one of those plants that is absolutely beautiful when it's in bloom. It has sort of escaped. There are actually areas along Cape Cod Bay, particularly in Dennis, where you have wisteria growing in the sand dunes, for crying out loud, and it blooms like crazy. And then you have people call and say, oh, I've had it for years and it never blooms. You can cut it back, try to force it into new growth so that it will produce new blossoms. But if you're really unhappy with it and you've had it for quite some time, you can try to dig it out and get rid of it, put something else in that space.
Mm. And well, mostly we see that sort of lavender color.
Yes.
But I've seen it in pink.
There is a pink and there is also white wisteria. Oh. It's beautiful. I love it. I've tried growing the American wisteria, which is so one thing about the Chinese wisteria, it can be a little bit of a thug. Mm. It's a very, very vigorous vine, and it can take over. The American wisteria, Wisteria frutescens, there's a beautiful one called Amethyst Falls, is less vigorous but blooms beautifully and is not quite as much of a thug. So if someone wants a wisteria, that would be the one I'd recommend.
Yeah. Somebody, before we bought the house, somebody planted some, you know, right against the house there.
Of course.
Every year I have to dig and dig and dig, and you still never get it all.
My mom had one against her house in Rhode Island, and somehow it found its way, you know, over the sill plate, and we had big vines growing into her basement.
Oh,
it was
boy.
Really quite ridiculous.
All right, Diana's giving us a call from South Orleans. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi. My question is about daffodils.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which I always assumed was sort of a plant them and forget them plant, which is a good one for me. But this spring, I had planted, you know, 50 or so in clumps around the yard. Last year, they all came up very nicely. This year, only the white daffodils bloomed. There was foliage in all the clumps that I had planted, but only the white ones bloomed. Have you heard of that?
I haven't heard of that, but I have daffodils, and many of them this year were also white, and it just nothing really occurred to me about that. I planted white ones, but I also planted yellow, and I had some yellow ones bloom, but not a lot. So that's curious, and I'm not sure why that would happen. Did you let the foliage on all of them ripen last year before you cut it down?
Honestly, I can't remember. I know that that's the right thing to do. So
yeah.
Most likely I did.
Yeah, yeah.
I certainly didn't do anything about giving them extra water, though, during the drought. So I'm wondering if
that could have something to do with it.
The bulb's not really developing properly.
Right.
Or, and are you supposed to feed them?
As you say, they're one of those plant 'em and forget 'em plants. You see daffodils coming up in, you know,
roadsides
for crying out. Nobody fertilizes
them. Oh, I know.
Them. Yeah.
And they were great this spring because, as you say, they lasted a long time.
Yeah, we had so much moisture.
Yeah, and my yellow ones did come up.
They did come up.
Mine came
up. It might not hurt to give them, a mild fertilization before the foliage dies back. You know, go out and spread some plantone or whatever you like to use see what happens next year.
Thanks, Diana.
Hopefully better luck next year.
That's right.
That's one thing I like about daffodils, too, is they naturalize. So you can get...
Well, I have this one white one. It's the Poeticus class. That's like the pheasant's eye type of... Only instead of... Usually in the pheasant's eye, it's white petals with sort of an orangey small center. This is white petals with like a yellow small center. And it has naturalized, and I've now got it coming up one plant in the woods, nowhere near where I ever planted it, which I think is wonderful.
Yeah, somebody helped you out there.
Have to dig it up and move it.
Yeah. All right, Marianne writes, last summer my butterfly weed was overrun by orange and black beetles about the size and shape of a large firefly.
Yeah.
They damage leaves and seed pods. Should I use insecticidal soap on them if they return this year?
That is milkweed bug, and they're a true bug. Everybody calls insects bugs, but not all insects are bugs.
Didn't know that.
But all bugs are insects. It's one of those things. It's one of the Hemiptera, one of the orders in the insect world, the true bugs. And they're black and orange and fairly robust in size, and they have sucking mouth parts, so they will feed not only on the developing pods but also on the foliage. And yes, you can use insecticidal soap on them. That should work fairly well.
Yeah, I think I have a lot of butterfly weed, and I think I remember seeing them as well.
Yeah,
I think I just love them alone. Do they really?
You have them in tremendous numbers, they can seriously weaken the plant. But, you know, we've got a lot of wild milkweed that seems to survive just fine with them.
866-999-4626 is our number for your gardening questions. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So, Roberta, very unlike you, you have not really done much in your vegetable garden yet this year.
I have to confess that I haven't planted a seed, and this might be the first time in... God, I've been gardening since I was five years old. So decades that I haven't actually planted anything. I mean, I'm harvesting asparagus, but I planted a gazillion years ago. It's just one of those years, you know. Sometimes life gets in the way or the weather gets in the way. As I mentioned, I'm back to work three times a week at a local garden center. And the days that I'm not working, it's been raining.
Yeah.
But, you know, one of the beautiful things about our gardening season here on the Cape is it goes so late in the fall that it's never too late to start in the spring. And I'm all geared up for this weekend. I am gardening this weekend. And so beets and carrots and lettuce and radishes and everything I would have planted a month ago is all going to go in this weekend.
Except peas.
I missed the window for peas, but they will go in probably in August, and I'll be harvesting them in October.
So you'll still get your peas. Yeah.
I'll still get my peas, but I have a soil thermometer, and I keep track of soil temperatures. Another kind of geeky thing, and the soil temperatures are approaching 60, and on a sunny day, actually go above 60, and that's sort of the magic number for planting things like bush beans and squash and cucumbers from seed right into the garden. So I'm going to be like massively planting on my days off for the next 2 weeks. And you know, by Memorial Day, my garden will be done.
Mm-hmm.
The other nice thing is when you kind of fall behind, you have to remember that once the soil gets kind of warm, seeds germinate much faster. So I'm hoping, or at least in my mind, things will catch up to the ones that should have been planted in April.
Right. Well, they said it too about the tomatoes. You know, you can buy these tomatoes kind of a little smaller size, and they'll be, but they do seem to kind of catch up after a while.
They all catch up. You know, folks come into the garden center and they're looking for particular varieties, and we may only have them in six packs, and they look at those compared to the larger tomatoes, and, you know, they say, well, wouldn't this one be ready first? And it's, well, not necessarily. Once you get a tomato in the ground and the weather is right and the soils are warm, they take off and they catch up very easily.
And you think we can plant the tomatoes now?
You know, if you have a floating row cover and hoops so you can go out there and cover them up, I'm saying yes. And even if you don't, again, the long-range forecast, it's in the 70s, supposedly.
Right.
I'll believe it when I see it. But even 60s, for the foreseeable future, and the nighttime temperatures, that's the critical one, are all above 50, you know, 55, 56, 57. That's fine for tomatoes.
Are you going to plant your basil?
No.
No. Okay. So we're going to wait for the basil.
I'm going to wait for the basil.
And, you know, I think a lot of people get confused because sometimes, you know, you go to some of these big box stores and you see these racks of, like, vegetables out early, and you're going, no, 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 it's way too early.
It was, yes, I went by a big box store earlier in the season, and they in April, tomatoes, eggplant, basil, and I'm just crying for the plants because
too soon.
And you know, if someone is buying them because they're reasonably priced and they look good when they come in off the truck, what are you going to do with them?
Yeah.
It's too early to put them outside. And it's too early. Basil tends to be particularly tender.
Mm-hmm.
If you're starting it from seed, go ahead and start it from seed right now.
Right.
I mean, you can do that. I grow most of my basil from seed. But if you're using transplants from the garden center, hold off another week or so.
Mm-hmm.
June. Memorial Day weekend is good. And, you know, again, just like tomatoes, you get it in the ground. In 2 weeks, it will be a plant that you can start snipping leaves off of.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I have a strawberry bed, and I have to say it doesn't look as good this spring as it did last spring, and it's probably because I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. Is there anything I can do to help it out?
Well, funny you should mention that. I have a strawberry bed that, frankly, looks very bad this spring. The plants are about 4 years old. And
that's about mine, too.
Strawberries are good for about 2, maybe 3 years. And then
really?
Then you really need to replant.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So I have some of the runners that set that are technically younger plants than the original plants I put in look fine.
Mm-hmm.
They've sort of grown out of the bed and are growing in the walkway. So I'm going to dig them up and once I clean out the strawberry bed, move them back in. And I've bought some plants to fill in the gaps. I need to add some organic material. That's, you know, because they're in the ground, you're not putting the organic material in every year,
right,
which I highly recommend. So I'm going to carefully work in organic material around the surviving plants and then plant the new plants, fertilize, water, and mulch, and they should be fine.
So you think I should rip up my plants and put new ones
in?
Yes. Yeah.
That's my advice.
I'm going to wait until after June, though, when they bloom.
If your bed is 4, 5 or older, years older, replant.
Yeah. Okay. And somebody had mentioned that they mulch their strawberries in the fall with pine needles. And I thought, well, that's a good idea, right? Because they like that acid?
They do, but there's sort of an affinity between pine needles and strawberries. They do very well. I just use straw.
Mm-hmm.
I use my pine needles that I rake up, go around my blueberries.
Mm-hmm. I have a little walkway through the garden that I have bluestone that I'm pulling up because I got the little guy running around. And I was thinking of throwing pine needles down on
it's soft.
Would that work?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes pine needles, if you put them on thick enough, make a very effective mulch. Mm-hmm. You know, water penetrates it, but weeds don't seem to grow up through it
and
very much.
And it's soft on the feet.
And it's soft on the feet and looks pretty.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
866-999-4626. If you have a question for Roberta, that's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. It's so nice. Everybody's outside. And
everybody's working, outside, yeah. Yes, taking advantage of that bright orb in the sky.
Exactly.
We haven't seen. In regards to, you know, weeds coming through pine needles, I do have to say I have this bed. It's a larger area where I've planted my blueberries, which I'm hoping to actually get a few blueberries off of this year. They're 3 years old, so I'm going to let them bear some fruit. And it's got a couple of inches, maybe 3 inches of pine needles on it for mulch. And last year I pulled aside some of the needles and planted spearmint because I like to use mint in salads in the summer. And it was just a very small plant. And then I pulled the pine needles back around it. The small 4-inch pot of spearmint now encompasses about an 18-inch area circle. So it comes up just fine through the pine needles. But yeah. I don't care. Yeah. It can be my ground cover.
You know, same thing. I love the mint as well. And it does. It goes everywhere. But it's easy to pull up.
Yes, it is.
So you can kind of contain it into the little section that you want. All right. So you are, as you mentioned, 3 days at the nursery. So tell us what's new. We got some new plants that we... And that's bad for you to be sitting there with these new plants coming in because you're going to want them.
Well, it is. I see things as they're being unloaded and just, you know, say, oh, I got to try that.
Can you put that in my car?
Yeah. You know, so I've bought quite a few new plants. I said I was not doing that this year because I need to replace my wood stove and that's what my earnings were going to go to. But clearly that didn't work. I love sea holly, Eryngium, just a gorgeous blue plant. Does well on Cape Cod, a very unusual flower. There was a new Eryngium, but I'm not going to be able to tell you the name of it because it's totally flown out of my head. But it has golden foliage. Mm. And just the combination of the golden foliage with the bright, beautiful steel blue flowers just knocked my socks off. Mm. So that's going in my yard. I also bought, it's a biennial, so I'll only have it for 2 years. It's an Angelica. Mm. And this one is called the Vickers something or other. And it forms a large clump of dissected purple leaves. Oh. And the second year will send up a big stalk with this kind of amazing dense purple umbral of flowers. So I'm looking forward to that too. Those were my two brandy new, never grown them before. That's plants I have to have.
All right. Steve is giving us a call from Falmouth. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A quick question on asparagus.
And yes.
How long approximately? I've always been taught that you should, you know, cut them for maybe 4 weeks or so and then let them, you know, go for the rest of the year all on their own, obviously.
Yep.
And that's because it worked for about 30 years. And I have other people telling me, no, you can continue to cut, you know, some here or there. I don't know. What's the theory on that?
I've always gone by the rule of thumb that you cut them for about 6 weeks. And by mid-June, usually, mid to late June, you stop cutting and let all the ferns go, grow up and replenish the root system through photosynthesis. They're heavy feeders, so I also like to fertilize them in spring, and I use a 10-10-10 type of fertilizer on them. And I also pay attention to asparagus beetle and use spinosad to manage that. But a well-established asparagus bed, if you're cutting for 4 to 6 weeks every year, that bed will go on indefinitely. Mm-hmm. So you're doing the right thing.
All right. Steve, thanks for the call. Let's talk to Patricia, who's calling us from Wareham. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning.
Are you there, Patricia? Okay, we don't have Patricia. All right. Jenny says, my poor blueberry plants never managed to make more than a berry or two. What's the very best site for them? high bush?
High bush blueberry want full sun for good production. They'll grow in shade, but they won't produce. So if you want full production, they really need full sun. You have to prune them when they're older than 3 years. Sort of take out at least one or two of the oldest stems right at the base, and this forces new growth to come. And it's a balance between the blooms and berries on old wood and pushing out new growth that will bloom and bear fruit next year. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of sunlight, moisture. They like a damp soil, so they should be watered and mulched. Fertilized in spring with a 10-10-10 type fertilizer, and the pruning in particular. If they're older than 3 years, take out a couple of old branches right at the base.
All right. Sumner is giving us a call from Martha's Vineyard. Good morning, Sumner.
Hello. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. This is the this year my Alma figs leafed out, as opposed to the last 2 years where they froze to the ground. Mm-hmm. So I am going to have figs this year.
I am thrilled. We talked to you a couple of years ago, and I remember being amazed that you could grow your figs in the ground. My figs are still in pots, and last fall I decided to take a chance and leave them outside. They're quite large pots, and I was being lazy and didn't want to drag them into the basement.
Yeah.
And they have not leafed out at all. The branches look pretty dead. I've done, again, the fingernail test at the base of the plant, and it's green, so yeah. I'm hoping they will send out new growth. I probably won't get figs.
Yeah, so cut them back to the green.
Yep. Yep.
Then they will. I have four brown turkeys, one Italian, one of another variety. It's American. So I've got, you know, a bunch of them.
A nice variety.
Yeah. And Sumner, did they all
do one?
Sumner, are they all blooming?
I got very carefully for about 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then planted it about a month ago.
Yeah.
Sumner, are they all doing well? They're all leafing out? All of them?
I didn't lose the leaves or anything. I think you have to protect it from cold, and you have to protect it from wind.
Yeah. Well, if they have survived, I mean, the varieties I got from the fig guy in, where is it? It's a nursery in Roslindale. Mm-hmm. Joe grows amazing figs, were theoretically zone 5 and 6. So I took the chance that they could, and they're in big pots, mm-hmm. But clearly...
They would do better in the ideal is they were grown in monasteries in a south facing stone wall.
Exactly.
And so they appreciate the heat.
Yes.
So they can protect them from northern wind. They'll do better.
Yeah.
All right. Sumner, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. And glad to hear that your figs did well. That gives, I guess, people some hope to maybe find the right spot for them.
If mine have survived and put out new growth, they're going in the basement next fall.
Yeah. I'm not taking any chances.
Right.
We've got about a minute left, and I thought maybe we could talk real quickly about community gardens. Are you doing the community garden again this year?
I am. I haven't planted a single thing there yet, but it has been plowed. I put 10 yards of organic material in it last year, so I'm taking a break this year. But I'm planning to get down there again this weekend. That's where all my dahlias go, and I've got to get the dahlias out of the basement, and I'm going to plant them in the ground over the next week.
Yeah, and it's a great place.
I love community gardens.
Just chatting with people.
We've got bluebirds there.
Oh, you do? Yes, wow.
I saw my first actual real life bluebird a few weeks ago. I stopped by to see what was going on. It's all been plowed. The water's turned on. People are showing up. People are way ahead of me.
Yeah.
It's just, I love it. It's
and
a wonderful place.
You get to share your gardening secrets.
Yes,
with
you do.
You learn a lot.
A lot of good gardeners there.
Yeah, exactly.
I've learned things.
All right, Roberta Clark joins us once a month to talk gardening. We'll see you next month.
Yes, you will.
I'm Indy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.